the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams.
Welcome to Education Now's October 4th edition. This is your host, Athena Melville. What is the educational value of live-action role-playing, or LARP? Montessori guides and California-certified teachers Christopher Melville and Anthony Melville discuss this issue with me in this podcast. Christopher Melville is a Montessori early childhood and elementary credentialed school teacher and has taught kindergarten through 12th grade as well as college courses. He has a BA in theater arts and a BA in creative writing and is a credentialed multi-subject public school teacher in California. He has been running LARP Fanwar events professionally for the past 10 years. He wrote the book for Fantasy Warplay and has been running his game World RoarCon for the past 9 years continuously. Christopher is currently teaching at Tree of Life Montessori Charter School in Ukiah. He has taught all subjects K through 12 at Melville Montessori School. Anthony Esserman Melville is a Montessori early childhood and elementary credentialed school teacher and has taught kindergarten through 12th grade as well. He holds a BA in music education and he is a credentialed multi-subject K through 12 CLAD. He has experience as an administrator and a teacher in K through 12 private Montessori school and has been teaching in public Montessori schools for 14 years. He is currently teaching at Tree of Life Montessori Charter School in Ukiah. He has taught all subjects K through 12 at Melville Montessori School. Both Christopher and Anthony presented a workshop on integrating the arts into a Montessori classroom at the 1995 American Montessori Society Annual Conference in Santa Monica, California. And both Tony and Chris have been actively involved with LARP since they were very young children. Both attended a Montessori preschool, and both are graduates of Melville Montessori School. Today, they both teach full-time and teach through Fanwar LARP during the week, after school, and on weekends. I am so pleased to share this dialogue and discussion with all of you, and I will be back after the interview with contact information. Enjoy. Hello, Christopher and Anthony. Welcome to the podcast Waves of Education Now.
Hi. Hello.
So that first hi was Christopher and that hello was Anthony. I have told the listeners about both of you, your backgrounds, that both of you are Montessori guides and California certified teachers. So let's jump right into our topic. Is that okay with both of you?
That's great, yeah, sure.
LARP, or live action role playing, and education.
Yeah.
The benefits. Mm-hmm. So let's start with, how does LARP, or live action role playing, how do you teach philosophy with LARP?
Well, it depends on the LARP. There's lots of LARPs around the world, you know. There are different LARPs set in different settings. There's like futuristic LARPs. There's
steampunk.
I mean, there's all kinds of different types of LARP. So it really does kind of depend on what LARP you're speaking of and what that LARP is interested in teaching. So depending on if you're doing like a fantasy type LARP where either like magic or spells or something, you might take a different tact. But usually philosophy is taught a lot in LARP the way that philosophy is taught through science fiction fantasy novel writing, where you have you take a premise or an idea that's sort of being batted around in the current sphere of discussion, and then you take that and you sort of weave it into your story so that people have to kind of deal with it. You want to say more about that, Tony, about examples of how you've taken maybe something that's a philosophical idea and woven it into your
story? Right. Well, like Chris said, there's all different kinds of live-action role-playing games or activities throughout the world, but the ones that I've partaken in mm-hmm. or have led, it's very similar what Christopher said, in that we generally bring up themes that that of our philosophical nature in the game, and that the children or the people involved have to work out or have to deal with in order to and see what the consequences
are. Like good and evil is a good example of one that often philosophy that comes up in the game, that we really try to break down the ideas that people have around this sort of really cut and dry kind of good and evil, and that often people are dealing with their own perceptions of what evil is. They might go out and you know, kill a whole bunch of beings and then call themselves good because they're helping to save somebody. And then you have to kind of, you know, let them work out that and say, well, so what does it mean then if you can go and kill all these people, but that's good if you say these other people who are going around and killing people are evil? How are you different?
Right, but this is Anthony again. You also have to remember that a lot of the kids, when we're doing this, when they get a chance to play monsters, and they also get a chance to play heroes or heroines, and they're slaying monsters, it's also a way of, you know, defeating those parts of themselves that, you know, are ugly, so to speak. In terms of, how do I explain that?
Like the shadow, like the idea that like are you from a Jungian philosophy or like Freud with the ego or the superego, where you get this idea that there might be parts of yourself that you're having a hard time dealing with. And so by being able to go and play this monster, this person, that this thing or this being that would do this evil or really horrible thing, you start allowing it to vent, and then it gets to be killed by someone, which then you kind of take on from a philosophical perspective, the same way that doing art or painting or something can allow you to express something that you felt that is sort of dark in yourself, and then let go of it. And by being that monster, you have the same quality. Right. So we're teaching philosophy that way, too.
Also, this is Anthony again. There are times, at least in the art that we play, where a child will say, Well, can I steal from my friend? Can I just steal his gold? And we say, well, what would that mean if you stole all his stuff? He's in your group. He's your friend. What does that mean? And get them thinking about it. Like, and we reflect, well, wouldn't that be an evil thing to do? And in the game that we play, if your character starts to act in a way like that, and to be evil, then they have to stop playing that character as a hero or a heroine. Then it goes into it, they have to play a new character, because at least in junior league, when the kids are, you know, developing this moral compass, mm-hmm. It's really important that, because they're developing these ideas and whatnot. So.
Right, I understand. You're talking here moral compass, ethics, in terms of philosophy, and you brought up Jung's philosophy. I understand that. And I guess what I was reaching for is how is it for Montessori philosophy?
Well, the Montessori philosophy, if people are familiar with it, is Maria Montessori's philosophy that children are self-directed, that they want to learn, that by providing them with an environment where they can learn, and then, you know, with the tools to learn, that they will teach themselves, and that what they really need is a guide to kind of give them, you know, the encouragement or show them a direction, but not necessarily to instruct, and the old idea of the instructor, you know, kind of idea. And we base Fëanor very much on a similar model. Mm-hmm. You have all these materials, right? You have swords and shields and spells and all these sort of things, and you have rules, which are sort of guidelines for the way to play this game, framework, so to speak. But what actually happens in that story is really driven by the children.
Yep.
If they decide that they want to go over to this, you know, mountain range and explore it, then they go there. And then, you know, Tony and I lead that and that story. We tell the story of what happens on the way, but we don't know necessarily what's going to happen on the way because it depends on what they do.
What they choose to do.
We might know a lot of variables. We might know, like, the creatures that are in that mountain range, and we might know what's happening in that mountain range politically at this time, and we might know, you know, what's, you know, what the weather's like. And so we take all that into account, and then they go off there. But if they decide to go, you know, down into the tunnels instead of up on the mountains, that changes the story. If they decide friends with someone on the way, that changes the story too. So that's a very self-directed model, very Montessorian model. Of being a self-directed learner, of choosing how you want to learn in this environment, and having materials that help you learn.
And not only that, but with the Fëanor model, it's based on as the kids gain experience, they have to make choices about what skills they want to have and what areas or guilds they want to go into. Which gives them special powers and really gets them to customize their own character. And which is a lot about, you know, Montessori's whole imagination. What she imagined, in my mind, education to be about, which was that it would be child-driven, that it would be from their interest and their, you know, initiative, what would happen and what they would get out of it and what they would learn from.
Yes. So it's a prepared environment that offers a lot of choices.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that is choice-driven. In fact, what happens in the game world is that we are telling, so to speak, is driven by the children's choices. And they really have the things that they decide to do and the missions they decide to do really affect the whole game world. And those that have been playing for a few years have really seen how their choices have affected this
world
they're playing.
Yeah, very much in the same way that a Montessori environment will really, the way the choices you make affect the environment. They affect the way that classroom works, and you're constantly aware of that. Montessori was very much about a constructivist like Piaget, that you have to do it in order to learn it. So LARP really forces you to do the thing. Mm-hmm. And then because you're having to do it, you learn a lot from that too. There's this whole idea that when you're out there, you know, in a LARP and you're fighting something and you're having to make a choice to kill this thing, it's a lot harder to do it when there's a person there sitting there that you've just been, you know, talking to and then you say, I'm going to kill them now, you know, in the game. And that's a lot harder to do than, say, you know, just in some other kind of imaginary game or on the computer or something. It's just you know, I killed them. They're just a computer program. You know, it's like, well, that's someone's character. That's somebody being that person. I'm having to have a human relationship with that person. That forces me to make choices. So LARP is really Montessori is also very much philosophy really encompasses peace education. And so LARP is very much, at least particularly our LARP, is very much a peace education-focused LARP with a real high emphasis on respect of different players, respect of the way you play the game, respect for the materials, you know, listening to and following directions with the group, and that it's team-based. There isn't, like, winners and losers. Everybody is constantly changing roles and having to play different people in the story, so it isn't just, like, a competitive sport. The whole storyline is based around trying to solve world problems.
Yep.
World hunger, plague, war, famine. How do you solve these problems in the world? And the way that the kids go about trying to solve those problems is, you know, Tony and I are looking at the real world and going, you know, how does this mirror the way they're solving this? They might be solving it with a spell or with, you know, or more with resources that they have in that world that we don't have here. But this is the same reference. They still had to come up with, there's a plague people are dying. What do we do about it?
Right.
Can we quarantine people? How do we solve these problems? And why are we solving them? That's the big question. Why are they driven to solve them? They're like, well, we're heroes. But what does that mean? That means we value life. That
right.
we respect. The goal is to preserve life. And to promote peace, ultimately.
Well, I understand what you're saying, Chris. I know that I know a family who went to Fanwar LARP, and that's what we're talking about here, listeners. Fanwar, Tony and Chris's particular LARP, and I'll be giving some contact information for Fanwar LARP in the outro to this interview. But this family went to Fanwar, and the mother contacted me, and she said, I recognized they were doing Montessori, that it was Montessori. And I was so impressed with that statement. It tickled me so much. Well, let's move on then. Now, it's fairly obvious, but Tony, can you tell us how Fanwar LARP is drama?
Well, it's acting. I mean,
yeah.
A big part of it is all about, I mean, the kids love dressing up. Those that do, we actually give them an incentive for dressing up. Often, you know, if they are dressed in a cloak, then they have a cloak in the game. And if they dress in a great costume, then we oftentimes they get armor points for that because they're dressed. I know there's one kid who came dressed in actual chainmail. And he walked the whole time. He walked around with chainmail on, and it was such a great experience. And you got to see how it really did affect his movement. But I mean, that's going into more realism. But drama is all over the place in the game because you're acting. You're acting like a certain person. You're pretending to be a dragon. You're pretending to be an ogre. And it's really the driving force of the game. I mean,
it's
play.
This is Chris here, but it really is. It is the kind of play that kids actually do. It's
yeah,
dramatic play. If you watch kids on a playground or anywhere, they're always like, "Let's play. We're pretend wolves. Let's be wolves, and then we'll play. Let's play wolves. Let's play horses. Let's play." But it's all drama based. You know, it's all around that drama. And so we teach drama by, first being good models.
Mm-hmm.
So Tony and I have to play. You know, literally thousands of different characters
yeah.
that we track and keep track of and have different voices for and different, you know, ways of behaving and we develop their motives and the hidden motives they have. And so kids are getting to see how, you know, people, adults play really complex characters and get to see those characters evolve over time because they might meet them at the beginning of the year and then over time they see that character change as things happen to them, and then that character evolves. So we're really good models there. But then we also encourage the kids to do these things, and we require kids to actually play a myriad of roles. They're not just allowed to show up and then be their one character, like
yeah.
I'm just this one guy. You actually, in Fanwar, which is unlike a lot of other LARPs, so this is one advantage that Fanwar really has, is that it's a community model, that you have to play both sides all throughout the day. So sometimes you have to play your character, but then also have the other half of the time, you've got to play a myriad of, you know, goblins, orcs, elves, centaurs, dragons, or, you know, drakes, or all kinds of things you might run into. And so the breadth of what your acting ability is continually growing. Also
yes.
because we as you get older and more experienced in the game, you're allowed to play more and more complex roles.
Right.
Right.
So you don't necessarily start out being able to play something really difficult or complex to play. And so that also encourages you
right.
to become a better actor.
Yeah.
The better actor you are, the better roles you get.
Right.
So
I know that drama was very important to Montessori, and it's something that is I really feel is neglected in a lot of schools.
Definitely. I mean, Montessori, with all of her like command cards and command games and all the things she does, the way she integrates language with drama, that really it's something that I think is hugely important. Often it's missed in Montessori. People
mm-hmm.
don't see it as part of Montessori because of the time that Montessori was doing all of this. You know, if you look at, you know, the 1920s, the 1930s, you look at like the time period, there's... For the time period, the amount of drama that she's doing is actually really high for the amount of, like, you know, theatricalness of everything that she's doing. Mm-hmm. And now people look at it now and they go, oh, we'll teach it the way that she did, not necessarily realizing that, you know, from our perspective, with as much drama and theater and movies and things that people see now, it's incredibly dry if you don't, you know, update it. If you don't make it much more theatrical and alive.
Yes,
you know,
so. And Montessori would like that. I think she would like to see that her model was growing and evolving. Tony, you sort of touched on current events and civics when we were talking about the philosophy, how you teach current events and civics through FanWar and LARP.
Definitely. In fact, our particular LARP, and I don't know so much about how other LARPs do this, but with FanWar LARP, we are always bringing in current events that are happening. Like, for instance, this thing that just happened in Libya with the ambassador. I put in an event that happened in a wizard palace that was very similar. And the children had a choice on whether or not they were going to deal with this situation that was causing an uproar, and they didn't, and so a massacre happened. So the kids getting a chance to see what the consequences are for choices that they make and the choices that they don't make, it's really great to be able to take current events and put it in a fantasy context, so that the kids can really deal with it, so that when they get older and they hear about these things in the past, or when, as you know, history repeats itself, they have already had a chance to deal with this kind of issue. Mm-hmm. And so they're able to talk about it and try to solve it.
Right.
Yeah, like a lot of issues that are going on in the world, too, we're always digging into our storyline. And some of them are ongoing, you know, like mm-hmm. issues of like slavery, mm-hmm. labor, or slavery. Those mm-hmm. are things that are going on in the world right now. And then characters, of course, trying to figure out how to solve those problems. And of course, they're struggling with this because they don't know how to solve it in the real world. So they're not really sure how they'd solve it in the fantasy world. This is a challenge. And of course, that's what we want. We don't really want, you know, quick, fast solutions to things that aren't really quick and easy to solve.
Right.
You know, when we have these real life situations going on with voting or situations where we're not really sure how well oversight is of a voting processes, that we want to make sure that the kids are having to deal with those issues in the storyline in a different format, so they can have to deal with it from these issues from their perspective.
Yes.
That makes sense to them, so that then when they hear their parents talking about it or discussing it, you know, it's like when they hear their parents talking about a place where, you know, people who are, you know, two different religions that very much believe in love and peace and that's the goal for everyone are killing each other, that they can maybe relate that to something that was going on in the game world that they were played in LARP, where these two different groups that are really very similar and really believe in, you know, getting along in peace are massacring each other over something that doesn't seem very important. And they say, well, that just seems like my LARP, you know, that just seems like the same kind of problem. Why are these two groups fighting, and couldn't they come to a solution? So we really try to leave that in.
So do you think that the adult league, which and the older group, older LARPers, that you mainly work with, Christopher, although you do the whole age spectrum, I'm sure that they can make the connections to readily with what's going on in the world today, and maybe with Junior League, it's maybe on a more subliminal level.
Yeah, I think it is more a little bit more subliminal or a little more unconscious for the younger kids when they're doing it. It's more like practicing for something. But with the older guys, I think they're seeing those connections much more directly. Although it does take a long time for them too. Often, they're not following world events the way that adults do.
Right.
They don't necessarily know that happened.
Right.
Or in the world. And so they don't see that connection. And I don't necessarily want them to be in that place. The goal isn't for them necessarily to be connecting every dot with mm-hmm. the real world. The goal is to actually be setting up similar situations so that they're having to deal with a similar event, and then right. when they get in there, they have more information about how to solve the problem.
Problem solving. Problem solving.
Yeah, problem solving.
Problem solving. Okay, and now it's pretty obvious how Fanoir LARP is movement.
Yes, it teaches PE.
It's physical education.
It's a huge physical education piece. I mean, right. it's incredibly active. You know, a lot of these events are like 6 or 7 hours long, and you know, most of that time you're running around, you know, at full speed, you know, literally fighting for your life, you know.
And out of doors, normally, right? Outdoors.
Always.
Always.
I've only done a few events ever that were inside, and even then, you know, they were very limited. It's really an outdoor event, even in different types of weather. There's all kinds of different terrain you're dealing with, you know, climbing, hiking sometimes, you know, jumping over logs and things. I mean, it's really, really active and very, very, you know, athletic. But also just from a upper body strength situation, from where having to wield weapons or shields and be in your body. I mean, I was a dance teacher for years, so I really see a lot of the potential for teaching all of these ways of moving. And there's intelligent moving, and there's a movement that will injure you. And so I try to teach kids when they're playing how to move with intelligence, you know, and I stretch out before you get going on a really big event, you know, get your body limber up before you just go, you know, rushing off.
Of this movement is taking place in nature.
Yeah, in nature, yeah, and also outdoors. The storyline. I mean, it's integrated.
Storyline.
So it's one of the beautiful things about the game, about LARP, you know, all LARPs in general, really, is that they integrate this piece. They integrate movement, the liveness, with a story.
And often, I mean, the Fanoir LARP and other LARPs, too, attract all types. But there's a certain group of individuals it tends to attract more. And it tends to attract more intellectual children in some cases. I mean, at least I've noticed that general trend, who tend not to be as athletic. It also attracts kids who are very athletic, who are into a karate and whatnot, because here's an opportunity to, you know, practice with weapons and whatnot and test their skill. But it also provides a really great opportunity for those kids who tend not to want to do other physical activity games like soccer or other team sports or whatnot that are attracted to this game.
Yeah, so we do get a lot of kids who normally probably wouldn't be as physically active. They'd be sitting in front of a computer playing a computer fantasy game or maybe tabletop kind of fantasy game or card game. And those people are now out in nature, you know, running around fighting with swords and probably getting more exercise than they ever get any other time.
Right.
And so that gross motor that they're developing is so connected to intellectual development.
Yeah, brain development.
Well, and definitely, and it's more integrating them as a whole person. And there's lots of, you know, more learning that's going on as well. But it's the intellectual stimulation that comes from the game that attracts them there initially.
Yeah.
And then also they're getting to be physical, which they're in one sense.
Yeah, it works in the other direction too. Like Tony was saying, like, I do get some people really into sports or martial arts or whatnot who come into Fanoir for the physicalness of it, for the activity, for the combat and challenging themselves and having to be in a very, you know, martial arts kind of situation. And then it challenges their brain, which they're not really as used to having to challenge in that situation. They're just like, I'm stronger than you or I'm faster. And that doesn't always win for you in the game. It's a huge advantage. But if you don't understand how the game works or what the right strategy is or when to attack and when not to attack, you're going to get creamed. So these people are learning, you know, who are really physically skilled, are learning that they have to think and have to actually, you know, be a little bit more conscientious or maybe think beyond more than they usually have. And in the other direction, you're getting people who are really so in their heads that they don't really move much.
Right.
And they're moving into the direction of, oh, I can't just say I do that. I actually have to do it.
Do it.
And I right. can't just say I hit you. I have to actually hit you, and that requires me to actually be competent with my body. Right. And
it's very holistic. It's very holistic.
Yeah.
And one more thing about the whole movement piece. A lot of criticism that Fanoir has initially gotten from people, especially in the liberal groups that that abound in Northern California is that we are teaching war. That's what we get. We get this. You're teaching kids to hit each other, and they're going. You know, you're teaching war, and what people who see the game don't look beyond the surface, because if you look at the game, and in a lot of LARPs, some LARPs like Creative Anachronism, this is not true, but for other LARPs, it's on a touch system. So, at least Fanwar is.
Yeah, it's a tag-based system. It really isn't about force. In fact, you're not allowed to use superior force as an advantage in the game. So it's much more like fencing would be. So what you're teaching somebody is to be very much in control
sensitive.
Of your body, to be sensitive, mm-hmm. to understand what's just the right amount of force, but not too much, and that you're actually penalized in the game whenever you use too much force.
Well, so I would say what you're saying reminds me of. I'm getting an echo there, so I don't know why that is. It reminds me a lot of the coup in Native American culture. You know, where you just touch, and you know when you would do battles, and
yeah,
it reminds me of that.
Yeah.
But
I never seen a connection before, but that's very interesting. Yeah,
it's true that there is very much an idea that a lot of times, and I remember this as being when taking martial arts as a kid, that I was really fascinated with martial arts, and then when I did martial arts, I just got needed to get to a point where I felt confident about my ability to do martial arts, and then a whole level of comfort and ease opened up for me, where I never really felt like I ever needed to, like, you know, I really wanted to hurt anybody. That was never the point. It was a sense of feeling skilled or capable. And I think that Fanwar really does that. It really gives kids a sense of, I'm capable with a sword. And that just makes me feel confident, which actually keeps me from getting into any sort of confrontation with anybody, because I just feel very confident about myself. It tends to be the people who are who have more of a low self-concept, who need to prove themselves, who tend to go around bullying people.
Right. Well, I would like to interject here that this idea that Anthony brought up about people, especially in Northern California, having a problem with your teaching war, that it's very important that the children act out the entire evolution of human history, because if it remains repressed, that's when you get violence. And this is all very well documented and illustrated by, and Chris and I have talked about this before in other shows.
Yeah,
dealing with
other shows. I recommend, if people are really interested in that, they can look it up, like looking up Francis Hewitt, Carl Jung, you know, Gerard Jones, you know, Alfie Cohen. There's a lot of people that we can go into, but the main point is just that if all you see is people acting out violence, and therefore they're teaching violence, and you ascribe to the monkey see, monkey do philosophy, which, you know, as human beings is a very, very limited idea that nobody goes beyond the surface of what they're learning, and that you're not necessarily looking at the idea that human beings are incredibly complex and have a really amazing ability to imagine, and that if they aren't allowed to process these ancient, you know, old things that have happened to our culture, then they sort of fixate on them, and
right.
they don't move through them.
All of them needs expression, and it needs expression in order to be dealt with. That is what, you know, you learn from all of the experts in child growth and development.
Yeah, and looking at Montessori would say that you know, children are drawn to develop mastery in the things that they see their culture values, and that they see their culture has done in the past. They learn to sweep. They want to learn to cook. They want to learn to do anything that the culture has done that was of value. And for thousands of years, using swords and being able to, you know, do all these things was incredibly valued as a cultural piece of developing physical prowess. And so if you don't let kids naturally go, that's something that was valuable at one time, I need to become skilled at it, but do it in a way that actually doesn't hurt anyone, that's safe and allows me to imagine it, then I can actually feel like I'm competent in something that the culture has said is competent and you need to be competent in. And then I can let go as I, you know, move on. I don't need to hold on to it as something that I really, like, need to go act out on people or something.
Right.
Yeah. Now, how LARP or FANLAR is art, of course, that is, I think, pretty obvious.
It may not be to some people who don't understand what goes into making the weapons.
Yeah.
The weapons have evolved a great deal. When we first started, like when Chris and I were kids, as I think you know, but the listeners probably don't know, we ran around in the Greenbelt, which was like a forest in, as our backyard, with wooden swords or sticks and that we would play with. Because we would play swords and we would imagine all of these things. And one of the things that was really unfortunate about stick fighting was you got hurt. And it was one time when we decided we were going to run a summer program for Melville Montessori School back, oh, was it 20 years now?
Yeah, 94.
15 years?
So almost 20 years.
But almost 20 years, yeah. We decided we were going to do, we wanted to do what we used to do as kids. It was so much fun. We imagined in the forest, and we'd love to introduce that to the kids. But we're like, what are we going to do? Because we can't have them run around with sticks that hurt each other. So we started, I think it was Gary Ballard, who came up with this idea, and he came with all these, like, this padded armor and this these padded spears and whatnot. They were really heavy and bulky, and they were fun to play with for a while. But it was obvious that we needed to do something that was more child-friendly. And so we started on a long journey.
Evolution, yeah.
Evolution
because
of
weapons.
Because
at the time, it was sort of important to understand that at the time, you know, we weren't necessarily aware that LARP existed. You know, it wasn't like LARP was something that we knew what, you know, that term was being used or that we even knew people were doing it around the world at that time. People were.
Because you were doing it more as a board game, Dungeons and Dragons,
yeah,
or Arduin.
People were LARPing all over the world, but we weren't necessarily aware that they were. So we were sort of inventing this thing, like, you know, and we were thinking that we were inventing something new. So we were starting from scratch. So as we developed it, it wasn't until around 2000, 2001 that I actually, you know, ran into other LARPers. And discovered, you know, that there was another whole group of people who were doing a similar type of LARP, and that there were that, of course, opened up all kinds of avenues for new types of weapons, different ways to create things, and safer and safer. And so I'd already developed it quite a bit by that point, but that really opened up a whole new level of how to keep the game even safer and thinking and incorporating things. Really, the internet has really been a huge advantage in this exchanging information, of looking up things and finding out how someone is doing something, and then improving on it, and so when it comes to art and craft building, the weapons we make now are you know, so I, you know, developed them, you know, so carefully, looking at each aspect of how to make a weapon that is both safe but child constructible, and that's really key, because the fact that everything you're working with is not something that you need a whole lot of adult supervision to do. You know, you can have an adult do just a few key cutting pieces if you're a younger child, and then you're just taping. And if you do it right, you've got this great safe weapon, and you can get it into how you're going to, you know, creating the art of it, you know, making it look beautiful, decorating, detailing, going to arts and crafts stores and getting little, you know, foam or plastic, you know, rhinestones to put in the handles, and looking at ancient artifacts and then trying to replicate those artifacts. And this is all things that artists are hugely into. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, because so many FANLAR LARPers get into the aspects of illustrating everything that we're doing, drawing the events. I have a couple LARPers who are cartoonists who actually, during events, they write a cartoon of the entire battle we just did and illustrate it and everything with little captions and everything, and then share it around with the group so everybody can enjoy their rendition of that. So there's the items themselves, too, all the magical items and things that we use in the game that characters can get, all are, you know, drawn, and often characters, you know, players draw these things, or Tony and I are drawing these things, and then you know, putting them out to other players to see. And so we don't use photographs very much for that reason, because we're trying to to emphasize to value the an illustration of something that a person created that they drew rather than here's a quick picture of a sword. Also, because most photographs could never capture
the magic swords that
people imagine.
Right. Well, the other resource is open source websites online of children's art. And that's what I really I love using for like magic cards and whatnot, going to an open source site and using pictures that other children around the world have created of a magic sword or a magic ring or whatnot, and putting that on a magic card. And the kid's like, well, where'd you get this? And I said, I got it online. It's a picture that this kid drew, you know. You can go to this website and see more of their art.
Uh-huh. So you're actually promoting other artists.
You're promoting other artists from around the world, other children who are artists.
So it's cool. Art appreciation as well as art and crafts and building. Okay. And we did talk about costumes. And yep.
That's really huge. And kids, I know a lot of kids who make their own costumes, do their own sewing, and elaborate costumes.
Right.
It's really quite amazing.
And I think, have we covered how it's creative imagination?
Yeah, I think we covered that.
So it's creative imagination. We've covered how it's in nature.
Yes.
We haven't talked too much about the way that we teach nature, though. I mean, it's in nature, but the fact that what we're also teaching is a respect for nature. So it isn't just that we're making sure kids are out in a natural setting, but that a lot of what we do is that we're in an environment and we need to take care of it. So what we talk a lot about, where are we going to play? Where are the areas that we're not going to go because we don't want to damage anything?
Where is the poison oak?
Yeah, I know.
Where is it not safe to go because it's like, you know, more than a 45-degree angle? So, you know, can't play there.
So there's a lot of this idea of respect for nature.
Yeah.
And some of it is more unconscious, like just the fact that you're in nature. But the game also has these moments in it where you're kind of required to do nothing. And they're kind of built in there on purpose. Like if you get wounded in the game, you probably have to wait, you know, maybe a minute of just, you know,
maybe 5 minutes,
maybe more,
maybe 5 minutes
in one spot waiting for someone to heal you. And you can watch the game while you're doing that.
Now, when you
stationary, that's around the things that are growing. Yeah.
When you say when you get wounded in the game, let's make sure that our listeners,
you want to say not really wounded.
Yeah. Yes.
So being wounded is being tagged.
Yes.
It's like being frozen in freeze tag.
If your character is wounded, if your character is
wounded. Or your monster.
Yeah. There's these places in the game where your character is wounded or your monster has been wounded. And so you are waiting for some other person or other character to come and heal you in the game. And so you have an opportunity to sit and observe. And that often, you know, can lead to moments where you are looking up at the trees or looking at the plants or maybe an animal that's crawling by and get a moment of having just to be still and see really what's around you.
Yes. So, you know, there's more emphasis there on nature and creative imagination. But how is it multi-age?
Well, the age in Junior League starts about 8. Although I have made exceptions for some 7-year-olds who have brothers or sisters who play and who are just dying to play. But they have already had all this experience because their older brothers or their siblings know how to play. So I will sometimes, I really have to check and see if they're developmentally ready for it. Because one of the things that can be very difficult for young children when we talk about multi-age is when their character, if their character were to die in the game. That's going to be really difficult. It's difficult for the older kids, too. But it's really not really appropriate for any kid, most kids under 8. And when they turn about 8, they're just about ready to deal with this, imagining your character that you played, you know, if it happens that they were to die.
Another thing that's really important with the multi-age is you get a lot of mentoring. You get a lot of older kids who are helping younger kids, and you see some kids who really couldn't do this kind of a game on their own, but because there's a lot of teenagers around, or there's a lot of, you know, middle school age kids, or 14, 15-year-olds, like, all these kids are really helping all those younger kids to see how the game is played.
Mm-hmm.
And as anybody knows, you can read the rules a million times of any game you've ever tried to play, and you won't understand how to play it, really. But if you sit down with some people who know how to play this game, and you start playing it with them, really, right away, you start to see how to play that game.
Right.
And you know within seconds what to do. And that's the same thing here, that when you see other kids playing this game, quickly you pick up how to do it. And so, you know, we don't try not to belabor the whole rules aspect of you know, reading all these rules or talking about rules, but actually just seeing people play it and having somebody explain it to
you. I have some specific questions here about the multi-age now.
Sure.
Of course, the multi-age aspect is very Montessori. Because in a Montessori classroom, you have a multi-age grouping.
Yes.
Now, with a junior league, what is the age spread there with a junior league?
The junior league is, like Tony said, it's 8, but it goes up to, like, 21. So you're looking at a lot of age range there. The majority of the players are right in that 12, 11, 10, right in there. Like, that's probably the bulk. But then you got a really big chunk that are all teenagers.
So when you say junior league, it's not an age because of the ages of the children, because you're saying 8 to 21. That's beautiful.
Well, yeah. I mean,
but the emphasis is on the kids. So
right.
The idea that it's a junior league is a very simple game system to play. The rules are simplified for kids because originally the game wasn't necessarily written for kids that young. It was written more for teenagers, and so the kind of rules you have are more complex. So the adult league is really designed around a much more complex game system, and so the junior league is a simplified version of that advanced adult league.
So when the adult league is played by kids
all the way up, or people all the way up to 21.
So in the adult league, what is the age range?
In the adult league, usually it's 13 and up, sometimes 12-year-old if they're really, you know. If they're really precocious, you could say. Mostly that's due to the complexity of the game. The game multiplies by like 20-fold. Like where you had maybe just 3 or 4 abilities, you've got 25, 30 abilities, and 60 abilities. It's really, really quite detailed. Also, it develops a lot in the nature of the kind of content you're covering, the same way that reading a book, you might read a book that's more designed for younger readers, 9-year-olds, 8-year-olds. When you read a book that's designed for teenagers, and there's a lot of content in there that is a lot
has overtones
and things that are implied. It's a lot. Sometimes it's more graphic and it's like or scary because it's a sort of like we're doing like a night.
Would you say that FanWar LARP is a kind of activity that parents could do with their children?
Absolutely.
I have parents who do that.
Yes, yeah. They do. And there's some parents like, this is right up their alley. And I remember hearing some comments from parents like, oh, I wish I had this when I was their age. That kind of a thing. And they really enjoy playing. Usually what they do is they play monsters. But I have a few adults who play characters.
Who are also parents.
They're parents, but they just want to play. And it's you know what? It's really great for the kids to have these adult models who are modeling play.
Yeah.
It's so important.
I've also had a lot of adults who recognize, and I'm really grateful that they do, they've recognized that this is an amazing opportunity for them to actually get involved in the play of their kids and see from the inside what their children are imagining.
That's where I was going.
There's a lot of people who say that they get on their parents get on Facebook so that they can understand what their kids are talking about on Facebook, or they want to be involved in the kind of stuff that's going on so they can better help their kids understand the world. And I had a recent experience with a father and son who play in one of my junior leagues, and how something really really traumatic happened in the storyline, where one of the main characters that many of the players knew in the story, he runs their town, he was killed, and rather without really any reason. It was sort of seemed sort of somewhat senseless, or it was really more politically driven, that he was killed by another political group for their own personal gain. His son were there at this moment, seeing this event, and later when they left, there was a conversation that the father told me about later. He said, you know, afterwards, he was so angry at that group that had done that, and he was just really frustrated, and I saw this side of him that I just hadn't seen, which was really great for me to see, and it provided us with an opportunity to talk about times in my life, like 9/11, or times when I felt like some group had really wronged me in some kind of way, and then maybe how I approached it from the best angle.
That's a great story, and it illustrates how this can be beneficial for a family to do together. And especially people are often looking for things to do with their kids and to do together. And I just wanted to make sure that our audience knew that this was provided an opportunity for that. Now, LARP, FANWAR, and education, and the development of language skills and story. I think that's pretty obvious.
Well, there's some things about LARP, FANWAR LARP specifically, that I just have to say that something that Chris developed that was pretty cool. I'm sorry, Chris, but it's pretty awesome. Okay, there's a storyline, which is obviously getting kids interested in understanding setting, characters, conflict, problems, in any story that you need to have. It's all there. But with magic, what's really cool in this game is elder sorcery magic is based on the idea that you have to write your own spells in dragon. But you don't actually write them in dragon, because dragon language doesn't exist.
Right.
But you are given a set of words, verbs, nouns, adjectives, at certain different levels, and based upon the different types of magic you use, you get different words. So the kids have to construct, like poetry, they have to construct these spells, and then they have to write down what the intention of the spell is, and then also the mechanics of the spell, how much mana it's going to cost, and what it does, and whatnot. And then, there are some rolling involved in terms of, chances that they may have made a mistake in dragon and whatnot. But still, they're going through all this process of understanding the verbiage and understanding the words and then quantifying or qualifying the metaphors that they're using in the words and how it, it's brilliant, Chris. I think it's one of my favorite things about Fanwar.
Well, Anthony keeps saying it was brilliant, Chris. It was brilliant, Chris. And, so I want to reiterate, although I think I mentioned it in the intro, that Christopher is the creator of FANWAR LARP. And so...
I suppose, although I've had so many people help me with it over the years, it doesn't necessarily feel like something that I've solely created. It's definitely, I think originator, that it's like a place for the origin of that idea, but so much of the creation of it has been a cooperative. Everybody giving their ideas into it.
Yeah.
I remember when we were actually bringing back to Montessori, we were driving down every month when we did our training during our practicum, and it was like a 9-hour drive each way. And so we talk about Montessori, we talk about all kinds of stuff, and then we start talking about this idea, this FANWAR idea that we had. We'd already done FANWAR, but we were like developing it. That was like its formidable period, this formidable time, about really developing it into taking all these ideas of all these games we've played and kind of weaving it together. And that was really cool.
Developing that language aspect of it, that how do we bring in these spells and how do you bring in language development? People will say, that they'll try to put together a spell and they'll be using a noun in the place of a verb, trying to make it make sense, and obviously, that's not going to make grammatical sense. Your spell is going to fail. So looking at it as the words have to make sense, and so we're teaching it there, but that's just from a maybe a grammar or a word study kind of place or poetry kind of place. But there's still the idea of how it teaches language skills in having to talk and communicate with other people.
Yeah.
And this is huge. The fact that you have to get up in front of a group often and sort of say what you think the group should do.
There's soapboxing in the game.
Yeah, public speaking and all these. Yeah. That's a lot of language skills and story that you have to be able to develop. Also, your own character's story. I mean, the stuff that has been written online by the players.
Oh, my.
these players.
The forums.
We have online forums for players. And so they will go on an adventure, and then afterwards they'll go home and they'll write, you know, like a 10, 15-page short story of what happened to their character from their
character's
perspective. You know, like, you know, not just this is what we did, but this is what I did, and they're speaking as if they were their character, and many of them have become very skilled at understanding point of view and understanding that each of their characters is going to sound different when they write. And they're not just going to be the same kind of writing every time. Each one may use different words. And we have these conversations. It's not just about, these players happen to be good at that, but that we discuss what a good chronicling, that's what it's called, looks like, and how to do a good chronicle, and that because of all the drama they've done, that connection of drama to language becomes really obvious.
Yes. So language skills, story, creative writing, and public speaking, because they're... And of course, how it's community is very obvious to me, but is there something we want to add? I mean, to how...
Well, I think you see a lot of homeschoolers doing this kind of activity lately, because they really want to create more of that community. And since Fanmore LARP really is a community already, it has a lot of connections. It brings a lot of people together who have, you know, hang out a lot. I mean, part of the fun of the game is that you're in the park all day long, and you know, adults are there hanging out, visiting with each other. The kids are all hanging out. We all eat lunch in the park, hanging out together. It's time to socialize and play. And it creates a community of people who understand the language that you speak, this language of LARP. And the kids can all talk to each other about it and then share ideas of things they want to build, get together later, you know, work on ideas that they have, build things, talk to each other online. There's all kinds of a generation of online communities and actual communities that are created from LARP. So I think that's pretty much all we need to say about community. But
right. So there is this communication beyond LARP through the computer, and so there's technology involved in there, and then through the website.
Yeah. There's definitely a community created online through the forums, like Chris was saying earlier. There's that community. And also there's cross-communication of community, because there's a group that is Fanmore in Ukiah. There's a group that does it in Petaluma, which is like the general Sonoma County kind of group. There's a group that does it in Berkeley and Palo Alto. And so you have people all over the North Bay, or in the Bay Area and the North Bay, who play this game, and it's all in the same game world. And so there's all this communication back and forth through this, all these kids all over the area. And it's really cool to see when they come to each other's LARPs to play their characters. And Berkeley kids go to Palo Alto, and Palo Alto kids go to Berkeley, and Santa Rosa kids come down to Berkeley. You know, it's like, and especially on the campouts, that's when it's really cool, when you have all these kids
all over the Bay Area.
From all over. And some kids outside. I had some kids who came down way up from the Oregon border. And they only come like once a year, and they come down just because they want to experience this Fanmore camp out. And, you know, it's pretty cool.
It is very cool. I would say it is interdisciplinary. Would you say that it fits that? Fits that category.
I've been talking about that all night.
Yeah.
And it's interactive. Yeah. We've been talking about that all night, right?
Yeah. How could it not be? It's extremely active and interactive. You can create the story yourself as you go along.
Right. And in terms of developing the an individual child's character and self-concept.
Well, we touched on that, like, in terms of just the feeling like, okay, I'm capable. I was able to take out an ogre or by myself, or I wrote that spell that saved the party. You know, there's so many different opportunities for someone to increase their self-concept. And although some people say, oh, well, that's not real. It's like, what do you mean it's not real? they just helped their entire, for all their friends, win that game. I mean,
yeah,
it's real.
I think it's funny that people would say that when they of course, you know, praise their child self-concept building at the baseball game.
Right.
Which is not real.
Right. Not
or they praise their child's competence in a soccer game, which is not real either.
Right.
Or they even praise their child's self-concept building in martial arts class, which is also not real.
Right.
It's them practicing a skill.
Right.
So the idea that there would be a question about the realness of one's development is sort of ludicrous when it comes to any of this stuff we develop. We develop self-confidence when we can see for ourselves that we are better at something that we want to be better at.
That's right.
And when kids see for themselves that they're better at using swords or throwing something or, you know, or saving someone or protecting someone, rescuing someone, they see for themselves that they are better at that. That's when their self-concept goes up.
Right.
And so you create opportunities for them to evaluate themselves on how they're doing and to, you know, to succeed or, you know, or fail, and because failure is very much a part of self-confidence building, too. If you never fail,
you're
not going to develop a self-concept at all. You're going to think you always win.
Right.
So you have to know that failure is part of learning, and if you're not willing to fail, you're not going to grow at all.
Right.
And losing, what's the phrase called? Losing generously? No.
Losing courteously. Where you,
yes.
Where you're willing to, you know, lose and lose with a good attitude. That you don't just sort of get all upset because you lost, or you know, think that you have to win. It's all about winning. You know, in fact, that develops so much because in the game, since you have to play both sides, you have to play a monster half the time, and you have to play your character the other half the time. Half the time, if the monsters are losing, which they usually are, you're gonna lose. Like you're almost guaranteed to lose half of the day.
Right.
So you're constantly dealing with the fact that the odds were against you, and you lost, and that's part of the story. It's
important. I totally agree that it just offers wonderful opportunity to develop a child's character and self-concept, especially because the philosophy, the civics, and the expression, the drama are all part of it. How could you lose? How could you not develop character and self-concept?
Well, also the idea that, you know, you develop a character in the game. That's what it's called.
Right.
You're supposed to make a character, and that character is supposed to act a certain way, and then they have this character supposed to, you know, develop over time. Well, if you're actually studying how a character develops and what makes them who they are and what makes them do what they do, well, then how could you not understand your own character and what's making you do what you do, and making you make the choices that you're making. So the more you understand the way characters work, the more your own character is revealed to you.
I can see that. I can see that, the logic in what you're saying, Christopher. And we've talked a great deal about how it's expression, of course. There's the drama, there's the art, there's the movement. There's no question.
There's the crafts.
There's no question that it covers expression and history. Now,
it's hugely history because a lot of the things that all the weapons that we use are, you know, they're not just made up weapons. We use the actual names of the weapons from history. All the armor, the helms, everything is, you know, historically used. We actually even put the equipment sets that people use in the game are actually historical equipment sets, groupings of equipment that people would historically have used in medieval combat. So when the kids are out battling, they get to see the way all these different types of weapons would have interacted and what would work against different things, why someone would have chosen an axe over a sword in different situations. So you're seeing a lot of historical choices and the development of warfare through time, which is a useful thing to understand about, you know, why our culture has gotten where it's at, and a lot of history is driven, unfortunately, by wars. And so if you don't understand, you know, why this group won that war, you may not understand why we're in the situation we're in right now. It's also a lot of history in feudal systems, feudal systems all over the world.
Japan as well as Europe.
Yeah, you know, because like my main capital city of the world I run is very much of a more feudal Japan. Or mainland China situation, and there are other places that are more like maybe England or Germany or the Norse. You know, so you're seeing a lot of different historical developments.
Right.
Like Tony's, the stuff that Tony runs is a lot of Central American influence or a lot of Egyptian influence. So you're seeing a lot of the historical
and mythology as
mythology
well.
That's woven into this because of the gods and deities that are in the storyline. Because the game world, Fëanor posits that all deities exist, and the more belief one has in those deities, the more power they perhaps would have. And so the idea that you have to deal with all the deities that have ever existed, and that they're all there to contend with, creates this the situation where players really have to understand all of those deities and their historical backgrounds and their development and the mythology around them and why they were the way they were.
So it's history, not just because of the weaponry that you use and the costumes, but because depending on where the adventure takes place and in what point of history, you're going into mythology.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mythology and literature.
And caste systems, like different parts of the world have different caste systems,
right.
Or different ways of. There's one part of the world that I run in Willandis that is matriarchal, mm-hmm. And there's, so they're getting different experiences of how different cultures
run through time
and how their mythologies kind of are based upon their way of life.
Also, like, when we're looking at how you evaluate these cultures, because they have to go travel from country to country and encounter different cultures, and you get to see how those cultures evolved. And one of the things that you look at is like a pest grid, with a political, economic, social, cultural, what is it that makes this culture the culture it is? And how can you tell how this culture operates based off of the choices it makes, what it values? And that's an incredibly powerful historical tool to understand. I mean, also just the idea of if you're going to understand history, you have to understand how to treat artifacts. If you find an artifact, where it was found, what was around it, the depth it was discovered, exactly the wording of when you translate it, all these things are really important. In the game, kids will find these artifacts, old writings or ancient mm-hmm. texts that they'll find, they'll unearth, and they'll have to then translate them from an ancient language into their own language, into English. And so there's a lot of transcribing going on of kids having to figure out how to create a cipher and what a cipher is and how to decode something. And then also then looking at the actual way it's written and then trying to unpack it for its metaphor. And just like the Tome of Hammurabi, the Code of Hammurabi and all these rules of laws can tell you so much about a culture, this is true of when you find an ancient artifact. If you find an ancient text and it happens to, it seems to be mentioning quite a lot the importance of silver pieces, then you might be like, well, why is that important? Well, you might notice that something that seems very obvious, they had silver pieces. Like, that's actually really influential because that means they had money. They had money, they had trade. If they had trade, they knew other people. I mean, there's all right. kinds of things that expand out of that you're teaching kids to notice and pay attention to detail, which history is a huge piece of.
Yes.
Like, for instance, in one part of the world, there's a Mayan inspired culture, and the kids don't know the language, and the Mayans are counting on their fingers and toes, which Mayans did, right? Because they had a base 20 system. Mm-hmm. So the kids are trying to figure out what the amounts of things were and whatnot, because the people who are playing the Mayan inspired cultures. We're using both the digits on their toes and their fingers to count out money and whatnot. So it's a lot of fun, and the kids learn a lot about different cultures in the game, depending on where they go.
Right. So that's how it is: history and literature, and mythology. And you've just mentioned a little bit about how it's math, about the Mayans counting on their toes and.
We didn't talk about math, but there's so much math in the game that the kids have to calculate and keep track of, and then code breaking and riddle breaking. There's like so much riddle, so
logic
many riddles,
puzzles.
Logic puzzles that are.
Yeah,
are
just
so
math.
Much.
I mean, there's math in the monetary system because. Each of the amounts of items that we use have a different monetary value, and so you can sell them and barter and trade them, and magic items can be sold and traded, and so there's a lot of math going on there with bartering and selling. But beyond, then there's also like quick a recall kinds of math, because if you're playing a monster that has, you know, 7 hits, and you're getting hit quickly, you have to keep track of the amounts of hits you've taken, where you're at this point. If you've taken 4 hits, how many hits you have left? You know, are you keeping track of those when they happen? Each of these amounts, particularly in the adult league, it becomes really challenging.
Well, yeah, let's not go there.
In the adult league, you have to be very, very skilled at mental math.
Whoa.
And being able to add a different amount very quickly and no multiplication. And so those sorts of skills are really valued in the system. And so you have a lot of math knowledge.
Right. I can't think of any subject that we've left out. And we even touched on how it's science by your talking about archaeology, I think.
Yeah, so also it's science because a lot of the things that you're basing all your choices on, the physics in this world that we play are very similar to the physics in our world. I mean, there isn't really a whole lot different. There may be magic, but that magic still bases all of its, you know, its principles on physics. So we haven't necessarily changed those laws of physics. We've just added something called magic, which can affect those laws. And so if you want to do something in the game, like grow something, you can take a very, you know, uninspired approach and, you know, just use some words, elementary words that say, you know, I make this big. And you're like, okay, well, that was really, you know, useful, but it maybe didn't work so well. But if you understand how, you know, cells work, or you understand how a plant grows, you might say, you know, I increase the potential of this seed. And you're like, oh, well, actually, that's a much more elegant way of getting at really increasing the size of that plant over time. So all the physics and the science are still going into this game, and you're having to understand those physics when it comes to how you solve problems in the game. Because just because you have a means to solve it that's magical doesn't mean that magic doesn't operate in a real physical world.
Yeah. Well, there is a lot of science when we talk about, you know, force equals mass times acceleration.
Yeah.
That really takes a big play. I mean, because the kids ask sometimes, like, well, why did that boulder kill me? And you know, it's like, well, normally when a boulder gets thrown at you, the amount of mass that it had and the amount of acceleration it had was less in terms of acceleration than that of this other giant that was throwing it at you, because he's got greater force. He's throwing this massive thing with greater acceleration. It's going to do more damage to you. It's going to do more force to you. So
yeah, and then also just in the raw literal world of force equals mass times acceleration, I talk a lot about when we talk about making weapons.
Right.
And for a long time, people say, like, the weapons shouldn't be light. They should be heavy, because then they're harder to swing around, and then that makes, you know, you wouldn't be able to swing them very fast, and that'll make them better, more realistic. But if you understand, you know, physics, that's a bad model. If you create something heavy, it has more mass. And if you swing it fast because you're strong, then it's going to hit with a lot more force.
Right.
So you don't want that. We don't want force in the game. Actually, what we want is just the right amount of force to know that I'm hit, but not so much that I ever get hurt. So what we try to create are very lightweight weapons, and then we explain to kids that what that does is it creates, you know, less mass. Therefore, it can go faster and create the same amount of force as something heavier going slower, and we can then, you know, keep our game safe.
Well, I'm going to tell all of our listeners about the FanWar website, where they can go and see the weapons. I myself just love the way that the bow and arrows work, because they're not really arrows. So they can see them there.
We don't actually shoot bows. There are some arts that do. But we find that it's, especially for kids, it's much safer to use a packet-based system where you can throw arrows at people, you know, little packets, instead of actually wooden arrows with feathers and all that, because it would be so dangerous to do that in real life. Right. And the amount of force, once again, would be so dangerous. So.
Right. And for it to really be an effective arrow in the game.
Yeah, and for us to really be playing, you know. So there are LARPs that do, though. I mean, like I said, there are thousands of LARP all over the world. You can go to Shade's LARP list online and see all the thousands of LARPs all around. And each of them with its own take on all kinds of things. Each of them, you know, speaking to all the things we've been talking about. A lot of these LARPs that you'll find really are getting into this idea that LARP allows you to not just understand a concept, but like to take it on and wear it and walk around in it and really get deeper into some of these big issues that our world is facing and how to solve them. And until you actually have to live the situation, you really don't understand it. Like
that,
you say, you know,
that
walk
is
a mile
the value
in someone
of drama.
Else's shoes, right?
That is what. That's why Montessori knew the value of drama, because it lends itself to what, just exactly what you're saying there. And of course, doing that with current events is just so essential and wonderful. And of course, literature, which we've talked a bit about, but is, I think, my favorite aspect of LARP. Fanoir is its connection to literature and science fiction fantasy, because so much of the rich story in literature, like Tolkien, like Star Wars, you can act out with LARP. And it's
you're sort of taking a role in these archetypes that are being portrayed in literature.
But, you know, this is something that kids do naturally. I mean,
they watch
the movie Star Wars, or they read Lord of the Rings. Kids just will naturally do this.
Of course they do.
I think we need to give some credit to kids. LARP really is just an elaborate form of play that just makes play funner.
Right. When you take a look at the life of, say, Carl Jung, well, of course he was going there, just like you say, give children the credit, but he was alone. He was alone in his imagination. He didn't have others to share this with. And that caused a crisis in his life.
Montessori's the same thing. She said, you know, everyone talks about this Montessori method that I've created, and they all, you know, they talk about Montessori. What's the quote about the finger?
I pointed to the child, and everyone looked at my hand. Everyone looked at my finger and said, ah, the finger, you know, the hand. But I was pointing at the child.
Yeah.
The child is actually the thing that people should be paying attention to.
Right.
And so, like, I agree with Tony that if you look at kids, they do this. They're already doing this.
Yes, they are.
So, you know, what we're really trying to do here is to create an environment that lends itself to that process kids are already doing. And I'm really starting to see it. It's really beautiful to see now, over the time that I've been playing this LARP for, you know, like 20 years now, that I'm starting to see the kids who were really young when they first started playing it, and now they're like teenagers or, you know, like adults too. And how they're creating their own worlds and developing their own storyline. And a lot of these kids that I'm playing with now who've created their own world, they meet after school at their friend's house, and they, you know, they've created their own weapons, so we've taught them how, and they're taking on LARP as their own thing. They're owning it as their own. They're seeing it as their own and not just something that I do and provide, or they have to go to my event to do. That LARP is not something that Tony or I, you know, hold or the keepers of, that it's something that we created a system for, but people are doing it everywhere, and people have been doing it for generations. It's just something that this is a new form of it and a way of expressing it in a safer way for our time.
In fact,
J.R.R. Tolkien, there are stories that actually Tolkien himself did LARPing. He would dress up and role play different people or persons in historical times, and he was a linguist, so he really got off on speaking in a certain way,
using the actual archaic rules.
Yeah,
and there's even evidence that Queen Elizabeth LARPed.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
of course
great.
We've already talked about the Native Americans and coup. And of course, the mythology, psychology, and the archetypes, which are so important. It's so, so very important. What's happening in so much of education today is the loss, is the loss of all of this. And so, to me, this is it's so exciting, and it's such a wonderful opportunity for adults, multi-ages, a wonderful educational opportunity for multi-age group. Now, I'm going to be telling people in the conclusion, pardon me, I'm going to be giving contact information to Fanoir LARP and also to Muse, and to the website, and I'm just so thankful and grateful to both of you for taking the time do this interview. I was really excited about it, and I feel like my listeners are really going to enjoy it very much.
I hope so. I mean, I get a lot of questions from parents who really want to know a lot of these details, and so it's nice to have an opportunity to really go through it all.
Yeah, in fact, like when we're at a LARP activity and, you know, we have people who want questions, you know, they have all these questions they'd like answered, and really, I'd really love to talk about it, but I've got 20 or 30 kids who all have their questions that about the game, you know. So
yeah, the focus is on the kids.
It is.
That's really where the focus is at that time.
Right.
So
you're also both teaching full-time while you're doing LARP. So if people want to contact you, shall I have them send an email to Hermes, to me, and then I can send it on to you? Or do you want to...
You can contact Hermes. I think that would be great.
Yeah. Or you can go to the website, which you'll tell people about later, and there's a link there, too.
There is a link to contact you on the website.
Yep. Yes. And you can also, there's a lot on the website. You can find a lot about the calendar. And there's videos where you can actually see these kids
know in the promotion,
doing it.
In the promotion, I have sent people that I'm sending out. There are some videos. There's a connections to some videos on LARP, on FanWar LARP. And I'm letting everyone know that there are other videos at the on YouTube, how to make weapons, and talking about both the Junior League and the Senior League, and so they can get a lot more information there from the YouTube. Well, unless you feel that we haven't covered anything, Tony Anthony's chuckling there. Have I left something?
What haven't we covered?
Yeah, what happened?
I don't know.
We've got it all.
There's so much.
Covered it all.
Yeah.
I thank you both of you so very, very much. And thank you to your families for sharing you with me this evening. We're recording this. I'll let our listeners know we're recording this on Monday, October 1st. And it will be... launched as a podcast on Thursday, October 4th.
Well, I just want to thank you, Athena, for asking Christopher and I to do this because, you know, we talk a lot about together, you know, a lot about these ideas, and just going through this whole experience, it's really been great to draw out all of those things that we know about LARP. All the connections that are there, but this provides a document that really, you know, solidifies it, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it allows people to see all those pieces in one place.
Right.
Yeah.
I've always seen how it was education, I've always seen how it was Montessori education, but I wanted to have this interview so that others can hear how it is Montessori education, not just education, but Montessori. I think she would love it. I think she'd be out there LARPing with you. So good night.
Good night.
And thanks again.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So now you know how live-action role-playing covers all topics in education and functions to develop the child's small and gross motor skills, as well as cognitive and expressive skills. And of course, there is much joy and creative imagination in the process. Websites for Chris and Tony: the FanWar website, fanwar.com/page.php?22, or just Google FanWar or fantasy war play, and the website will come up. Website for Anthony, Mentoring for Understanding and Support in Education, 3Ws.MuseMentoring.com/MUSE, and it should come up. Contact information: you can leave messages for Christopher and or Anthony on the website, on the fanwar.com website, or you can send them to me at hermes@pacific.net, and I will see that they get them. You could also leave them messages on the Education Now Facebook page or Google Plus page. There are videos for FanWar, one called FanWar, and you capitalize the F and you capitalize the W. FanWar LARP, video on Basic League, and you can find that at YouTube. And there's also one called Advanced League FanWar Demo. That's Advanced League FanWar Demo in YouTube. And there are several other videos if you search under FanWar LARP on YouTube. You can listen and download free anytime at the Education Now website. And please, again, join us on the Education Now Facebook page or on our Google Plus page to leave comments and join the conversation. On October 18th, Education Now will welcome the return of Leah Mae Horsley for more discussion on wildcrafting and the garden. So I'm looking forward to that. Education Now is a production of the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education. You can listen and download free anytime at the Education Now website. And Education Now podcasts are listed on the American Montessori Society website at www.amshq.org. Look in the local events pages. I'm sending cosmic love to you all, and reminding you to follow the child. This is Athena Melville saying goodbye for now.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know.